Hello, everybody out there in comic book land. My name is George Serrano, aka The Don, and we are here for episode 3, because everything good comes in threes, of the Major Issues podcast brought to you by Comic Book Click. And I'm not alone. I'm being accompanied by fellow comic book clicker. Sir, introduce yourself.
My name is Dan, the comic book man, and George, thank you for having me.
Yes, Dan, the comic man, is here in studio. I mean, we got to hang out with Yogi, you know, a little bit there. We got to hang out with Claudius Maximus, and now Dan, the comic man, the click is growing ever so big. I mean, this is the latest and greatest thing to come to comic books and comic book media here on Major Issues, and we decided that this week it would be a little bit of a special edition of the Major Issues podcast. Look, episode 3, and we're already giving away special editions. We're going to go and take a deep dive into the 2009 American superhero film, Watchmen, directed by Zack Snyder. And it seems to be the perfect time to delve into this movie because we've already kind of went into Doomsday Clock issue 1. The Watchmen are back. They seemingly are knocking on the doors of the DC Universe, and their characters will be meeting the characters of the DC Universe very soon. So I decided that it would be a good idea to talk about how big this film was, how big the source material, the 12-issue miniseries was, written by Alan Moore. And to see, I mean, like I said, it's been 10 years, how we feel about it after so much time has passed. So,
well, the movie still holds up to me. I watched it recently, and it's still a very explosive and interesting movie. You know, Zack Snyder did a great job.
What's your history behind this film? Because in 2009, I was actually overseas. I was actually in Iraq when this film came out. So I missed a lot of its the promotional material behind it. I saw some of it, but I couldn't really get a handle on what the film was going to be. So I didn't have like this explosive excitement towards it. And I also wasn't very familiar with the series, the miniseries written by Alan Moore. Now that's my fault, because this book is amazing. And since then I have read it, and it is amazing. And it is listed, I think, on Time Magazine's top 100 novels, American novels to read. Like, the only comic book up there is this Watchmen book. And so I had no history with it. Fell in love with it, but I see that how people can have their problems with it. How, you know, to some people it's their favorite take on the superhero genre, and with others they see it as a little bit too gratuitous or a little bit too bleak. But I'm a fan of this film, and I think that it needs to exist in the pantheon of superhero films, just because of the message that it sends and its take on what superheroes, you know, the other side of the superhero life, the less glamorous side of the superhero life. What's your history behind this film, and were you excited initially when you heard it was coming out? Did you have a history with the comic book? And if not, what kind of feelings did you have going in, and were you justified in feeling that way afterwards?
Well, for the first, maybe I'd say, year of its release, I had no idea what this movie was. I have no history with the comic book whatsoever, and just one day it was on TV, and I had nothing to do for 3 hours, seeing how it was director's cut, and I just watched it. And when I was watching this movie, I started falling in love with everything about it. Yes, it's long, but it doesn't feel like too slow, and it's not too quick paced where you don't marinate in every scene you watch. You get to see everything develop in front of your eyes. From the expositions aren't that ham-handed and aren't that forced. Like, even the opening slow-mo, Zack Snyder's style, you know, it may be over-stylized, but it's a style we all recognize.
Yeah, I mean, Zack Snyder definitely brought his flair. And I guess maybe, you know, instead of doing what we normally do, which is a paint-by-numbers recap of the plot and then stopping at the important parts, I think we should just talk about the bigger ideas that this film presents. And some of the overarching things that have happened because of this film. This film has a tremendous legacy. One of those things is this is the first superhero film that Zack Snyder directs. So I wanted to do that for a second and talk about Zack Snyder, the director. Now, Zack Snyder got this film off of the success of 300. And a lot of the things that made 300 what it was are here. The slow motion shots, you know, the contrast in colors, and it was important for him to bring these tools over, but it was also important for him to adapt straight from the page what Alan Moore created, because that 12-panel system in comics, you know, that was revolutionary the way
They said that this was an unfilmable comic.
Yeah, that was
the chopping block for years in Warner Brothers. Like, for
a very long time, it was called the unadaptable. Like, how do you adapt the unadaptable?
And Zack Snyder did it. Now, it's very polarizing because, you know, it depends on who you ask. Some people don't like this movie at all. Some people think it's very self-indulgent, think it's overly long, think the ending makes no sense. The ending makes a whole lot of sense, and no one...
Yeah, people don't give it the credit what it's due. But after this, Zack Snyder ends up getting, you know, the bulk of the work over there at DC Films. It's because of things like Watchmen. It's because of things like 300 that he gets BVS, that he gets Justice League. As we know it, whether or not that's a good or a bad thing, I guess it's depending on who you ask. But what did you think about the style of how Watchmen was shot? And how much of that do you think is Zack Snyder versus literally just taking it from the page? Because I say this constantly. There's a lot of people that say, how could that comic movie do so bad? A lot of comic fans get really up in arms and they'll argue and they'll say, you know, the source material was there, the source material is there. And when they say that, they don't mean that basically that just the main plot points of the character or the character motivations are on the written page. But when a comic book is written, you have to direct. There are camera angles.
It's very subjective because the comic book panels aren't moving.
Right.
It's your perception of that comic you're reading. You know, it's just like storyboarding. You know, you could throw up the storyboard all day. It's how your brain makes the movie work.
Right. And think about it. That's even the harder thing, right? Because if I'm drawing a character, it's way harder to quote unquote move the camera around that character if I'm drawing them. If I have the camera in my hand, it's easy, right? I want an over-the-shoulder shot. But now if I'm drawing, I have to draw that over-the-shoulder shot. Then I have to zoom past what's over their shoulder to show something. That's the beauty behind comic book panels. And with the 12-panel system, it was always building tension. And so how much of the genius of this film do you think is just going literally by the book? Or do you think it is the storyboard that is the majority of this film's genius? Or is a lot more credit deserved to Zack Snyder?
Well, Zack Snyder deserves a lot of the credit for how visually this movie was shot. You know, from the slow motions and the large pan-ups and from... it's just... A lot of it is the genius of Alan Moore, too. Alan Moore's comic is great. It's a fantastic novel. Anybody should pick this up and read it. You will not go wrong. But we can't say that Zack Snyder had, like, you know, no part of it. Like, he's, if you look at 300, even look at if you look at Dawn of the Dead, he can handle these large set pieces.
Yeah, he does shoot action well. I mean, I personally like his slow motion stuff. But like I said, I can see how some people can see it's a little bit indulgent. But this was a fresh take on the superhero genre, like I said. So I was seeing all of this.
Oh, yeah, this had no winners. Time. Nobody won in this movie.
Yeah, that's another.
Even when you win, you still lose.
That's a big thing. And
there was consequences in this movie. This was a comic book movie with consequences. This wasn't your grandpa's Superman.
Well, you know, both the film and the miniseries were the forerunners of a lot of the ideas that people talk about now in comics. You know, the Keen Act that's introduced is basically, you know, the modern day version of that would be the Superhero Registration Act, or as the MCU fans know, as the Sokovia Accords. The same idea, right? That superheroes, these mass vigilantes, need to be put in check, and we don't need them anymore. Or, you know, they need to understand that they are not judge, jury, and executioner.
Well, that was another great concept. There was a comic book world where we don't want superheroes,
right?
Like, just imagine, you know, everybody wants Spider-Man. Everyone needs Wonder Woman. Everybody loves Batman. But this is a world where nobody wanted these people.
Very, like, that's very much how society was in those early 80s and the 90s, right? We're bucking against the traditions of normal stuff. This book, and also, you know, the book that comes after it, The Dark Knight Returns, from Frank Miller. you know, really takes these colorful characters that we've been reading about in books, right? Pow, bam, zip, and puts blood and, you know, broken bones.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of realism.
And I want to commend Zack Snyder and, you know, everyone just behind the film for allowing the realism of all that to be shown. I mean, we get a superhero rape scene in this film. You know, that's not That's not something you're getting in every superhero. You're not turning on Spider-Man and seeing that. So it's good to see that they didn't shy away. I mean, I'm not one for gratuitous sexual abuse or violence in film. But if it is to serve the narrative and if it is to show the transparency of the real world, things that actually happen in the real world, then, you know,
all of the Minutemen really weren't. They didn't have superpowers. That was another thing about this movie. They're not supposed to have superpowers in The Watchmen, except for Dr. Manhattan. They're all just supposed to be like, you know, ex-military, CIA, spies. You know, they're just really good at fighting.
That's true. Let's get into the characters. Before we get into the characters, do you think this is one of Zack Snyder's better films? Would you put it in, the top three of his filmography?
I would say this is the best Zack Snyder that we're ever going to get. And as much as I love Man of Steel, Man of Steel was done beautifully, this is the best we're going to get of Zack Snyder. I don't think it's going to get any worse or any better.
Okay, I can see that. But yeah, let's get into the cast of characters. You know, we have Rorschach, who has no powers. A little bit of a dark, brooding take on the noir detective. He is absolutely out of his mind.
Yeah, this movie is really like crime noir type, especially with the Rorschach scenes where it's Rorschach's journal. And
who would you say is the protagonist in this film? Obviously, one could argue the various protagonists in the miniseries, but films usually follow one person.
Well, we're going by like, you know, overall do-gooder.
Well, the person you're rooting for.
Morals were there, you know, as much as he was, even though he did kill, his morals were there, you know, men go to jail, dogs get put down, that line, you know, like, I would say, like, Rorschach and Daniel, whatever his last name was, Night Owl.
Dryberg?
I think it was Dryberg, yeah. Yeah. But like, those two are definitely, like, you know, protagonists. I mean, antagonist is really, you know, what makes the movie drive forward, what drives the plot forward, and for that I would definitely throw the comedian there.
Ozymandias, you know, he's also in that position. But with Rorschach, it's odd because even if he's not the main protagonist, he's undeniably, besides Dr. Manhattan, the fan favorite.
Oh, definitely, he steals the show a lot of the times. He steals the show. That whole prison sequence was great.
Part of that is how he was written. The other part of that is Jack Earl Haley, who I think does a really, really good job. And he actually campaigned for this role. He knew all about this comic, was all for it, really wanted to be Watchman, Rorschach, and went out of his way to let people know that.
And I'm glad that he got it, because I think he does a great job.
I like his raspy voice. I like the stilted dialogue. Like, he'll just say stuff like, not wet, or, you know, like, just got up.
And then, yeah, and just hungry. The whole mannerisms of just the way he moves and everything. He always has his hands in his pocket. He's always talking in, like, short sentences.
What's your best Rorschach impression?
Let's see.
Rorschach's journal.
I'm trying to remember a line.
Hungry. You know, cracked eggs.
Omelet. Men go to prison. Dogs get put down.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good there. And, I mean, Rorschach has a sense of justice that's a bit skewed, even though he's the fan favorite. That's also what I wanted to bring in with this. Probably the most violent member of this this team at this point.
At that point, the post-breakup or even a little bit before their breakup, yeah, I guess he would be... Well, I don't know if he would be seen as the most violent of the Watchmen, because Comedian was pretty gratuitous in the things he did, like, you know, especially the scene where he jumped out of Night Owl's helicopter and just starts gunning people down with a shotgun. Like,
I'm interested in seeing, though, what the comedian was doing prior to being killed by Adrian. Because with the Keen Act was up, were they effectively all not saving the world? And if that's the case...
He was working with Adrian, and Comedian was the first one to crack during Adrian's plan, because the comedian knew that Adrian wanted to blow up every major city and then blame it on Dr. Manhattan. Right. And that's when they had that key scene where he went to whatever his name, Moloch. When he went to Moloch's house in the middle of the night crying. It was because of Adrian's plan to blow up the major cities and blame it on Manhattan. That's when he couldn't do it anymore. And then I guess the Vite got wind that he was, like, cracking. That's when the story starts off, him going to his house to kill him. Spoiler alert for anybody that doesn't
know. This is a complete... I mean, if you haven't figured this out already, this is a completely spoiler, super spoiler review of
spoilers,
Watchmen film. But
yeah, Adrian goes to comedian's house personally and kills him, which makes sense from when you see the 2-on-1 fight at the end where Rorschach and Daniel couldn't even hold themselves against him. Like,
but am I supposed to believe that Rorschach in this time is just? I mean, he's put this entire missing persons case. Well, not missing persons case, murder case. He's put this entire mystery on his own back. Like, no one else has. Like, Adrian is like, oh,
because he was being dead. Yeah, but he was being a conspiracy theorist. He was thinking someone's picking off costumed heroes.
Do you think so? Almost in his paranoia, he almost trips into this
he uncovers an entire plot that no one knew was going down, all because he thought somebody was picking off costumed heroes.
This is true, and that's what brings him to...
And he never conforms, even in the face of Armageddon.
He won't. He will not compromise. We get a little bit of his backstory, too. Apparently, his mother was a Lady of the Night.
That's another thing that I love is this is an origin story, but we're not getting shoved in our face that it's an origin story. We're just getting, you know, expositional flashbacks. And as long as it's 2-3 minutes and it's really quick and it's getting out of the way, you know, I don't have to see it for 20 minutes, then I don't mind it. I don't mind little flashbacks.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, it's hard because I imagine from when I read it, a lot of those flashbacks took place in time. Like, they actually, you know, took place chronologically. And but you don't have that time here in a film like this. Even the theatrical cut is shorter than the director's cut. You have even less time than that. So what a way to show all the information that you have to show with these flashbacks. I think that was a good idea to have the flashbacks as they are in.
And a lot of them made sense. A lot of them, it served the narrative, the overall narrative. Like finding out that Laurie's father's the comedian. Yeah. That all those flashbacks, like all those three choppy flashbacks made sense. Because
it
served
they build on each other.
Twist's narrative.
Right, they build on each other. But we, with that Rorschach backstory, we see that he's had kind of a messed up childhood, which leads him to be the kind of, I mean, he's homophobic, he's violent, he's angry.
Yeah, but he wasn't as violent and murderous until he saw that little girl that died during that case.
Right, exactly.
Like,
and
if it wasn't for that case where he saw that little girl die for nothing, he wouldn't be. He says himself, he saw the city's underbelly.
Right.
And then he can never look away or something like that.
And as you know, well, all these characters here were based, Alan Moore based them on Charlton Comics characters. Most people see DC characters, but it's actually DC bought Charlton Comics. He wanted to use actual Charlton Comics characters. DC said no, so he just took outlines of them. So Rorschach is actually modeled after The Question. But I think in morality, he's actually more modeled after Batman.
He's a Batman that kills.
Right. This is the Batman that, in the instance of seeing Joker do his worst deed, kills the Joker. Has had enough, says enough is enough, and this is that almost then that slippery slope that Batman
speaks
of.
Well, but then that's where it shows the difference between Batman and Rorschach, because Batman said it himself, you know, all it takes is that one time to kill.
And the next thing you know, you're a judge, jury, and executioner.
Easy. Yeah.
And so I feel like Rorschach is almost a dark mirror to Batman in showing what can happen. Like, I think
exactly.
Batman
like,
should always be...
This can be you if you don't mess up.
He should always be conscious. Batman should always be conscious that that's how far it can go. And with them two seemingly, probably, hopefully, going to meet each other in some way, shape, or form in the comics, it'll be an exciting exciting duo, I think. And little tidbit.
But what do you think of Dr. Manhattan and the whole, like, the fact that he's growing even bigger now in the comics as opposed to how it was in the movie? He's getting out there now. Like, they're making him a big part of things.
People are always going to like the best anything, right? And we were told that Superman was the greatest superhero of all time. We've never seen a superhero do what Dr. Manhattan has done in both this film and in comics. And, you know, with the average person not being a comic fan, this blew people's minds to have an idea that this man can just walk around and deal with, like, fusion and arc reactor technology while also making love to his girlfriend, while also being played with like a puppet by Adrian. It's this idea that this is the ultimate superhero, and everything else that we've been kind of rooting behind kind of isn't, kind of falls flat in comparison. But what I think is going to happen with the Watchmen now being brought into the DC universe is I think that they're going to try to humanize Dr. Manhattan, bring him down a couple steps, because he is at this point a god. And at several points in here, he says, you know, I may not be the god you think of, or if God does exist, I'm nothing like him. I believe the way it says, God is real and he is American.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things said about God, more so with him than any other superhero. We get the Jesus allegories with Superman sometimes, and Superman would be, I guess, in the same sense that I said that Rorschach was the question, Dr. Manhattan is modeled after Captain Atom. And as you know, he has the atomic symbol for hydrogen on his head. He makes that on his head. Hydrogen bomb, atom bomb, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all there. But in the same way that I said that Rorschach had a little bit of Batman in him, I can see the dark parts of Superman in Dr. Manhattan, in not feeling like he belongs, in feeling like he is above everything else.
That's another one that's like Superman at his absolute worst. Like, the day Superman, like, completely feels isolated from all of humanity, he's just gonna, like, stop caring.
How did you feel about his portrayal in this film, Manhattan, and his decreasing humanity, or decreasing, I guess you would call it, just... He just cared less. He had,
like, his best friend and his fiance left him in a time capsule reactor to let him die.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even watch him. They just left to let him die. So, like, you know, well, look how he is in the movie. Like, you can feel, like, every day he just backs 2 feet away from humanity. Just 2 feet further. 2 feet further. Till pretty soon, he can't feel anything. And by the end of the movie, yeah, he doesn't feel anything.
I mean, he goes to another planet at one point, you know?
He started his own civilization because he couldn't deal with the human race.
He says, if I get bored of life, I'll go ahead and create it. So, with this idea of Dr. Manhattan being a god, you get this idea also of people trying to coerce bigger ideas for their own narrative. For instance, they use Dr. Manhattan as a war deterrent to say, look at this guy and look what he can do. Watch. Hey, Vietnam, look what this guy can do. He can walk through.
Yeah, but it was even worse because they didn't just want to pin it. It's not that they wanted to blow everybody up and pin it on Dr. Manhattan. They wanted to completely change hands of the war. Like, listen, stop fighting us. Stop fighting Russia. We should all band together and fight this one guy who can literally, in a snap of a finger, you know, end us all. And that's the thing that Adrian didn't think about. That if Dr. Manhattan really wanted to, in a snap of a finger, he can end everyone.
Well,
that's
the argument that Batman has against Superman. But with Dr. Manhattan, it's weird that... Well, it's not weird. It's actually not weird. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's actually very fitting that if America did have the Superman, if we did have this all-powerful being, that we would put it in front of the American flag and say, hey, don't mess with this country, because this country
that's why we had that scene where they went to Vietnam and he's just blowing people up.
That's exactly my point. They have an entire army behind him. He doesn't need any of that army that's there.
Yeah, no, doesn't need those armies there.
It's literally a show of force. It's literally America, you know.
This is us. This is what we can do.
America.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, you know, just the Dr. Manhattan edition where his, you know, Johnson is swinging about 5 feet above everybody's
head. Yeah, thank
God
they covered that up, because you don't need that.
Like, but
this is a kids' movie, damn it.
Well, you know, he got a nice little underwear kind of deal there.
George of the Jungle sling.
How did you feel about Ozymandias's relationship with Dr. Manhattan? Because that has also been a big, what you can say, conflict, right? This God versus man, or almost science versus religion aspect of it, where Adrian is the smartest man on Earth. Adrian has figured out answers to everything. Dr. Manhattan is Earth. He is everything, seemingly, at this point, right?
He can create matter. Is he really the smartest man? I mean, he, like, Rorschach figured him out.
He did, but...
Rorschach, of all
people. But Rorschach figured him out because he's that crazy enough to figure him out. It's almost like... That idea is like crazy.
He had to have left some sort of breadcrumb behind for Rorschach to figure it out.
Rorschach
couldn't even kill him. He tried. He couldn't even get him. He pinned Moloch's death on him, got him to go to jail, and still couldn't get him stopped.
I also feel like Rorschach had pieces of it, but if it wasn't for Ozymandias laying the entire thing out once everyone gets to Antarctica, you know, I don't really know how much Rorschach has. And even if Rorschach did have it all, no one's believing him. I'm very interested to see what's happened. What's going to be the after?
Oh yeah, the journal.
Yeah, the after effects of this journal, because it will have effects in the Doomsday Clock. Somebody seemingly picked it up. Somebody read it. Somebody knows what's going on there. And the first issue of Doomsday Clock deals with the aftermath of everybody figuring out that hey, Adrian lied. Hey, that big thing that was said.
Well, see, that's what's that I know is what's different from the comic. I know that this time it wasn't all the major cities being blown up by one bomb. I know it was like New York getting some sort of alien space monster, like tentacle squid.
Yeah, they teleported a telepathic squid to Earth, and that seemingly killed a bunch of people. And then they used that to be like, you see, Dr. Manhattan, or just threats to the outside are what we should be worried about. In this film, they point exactly at Dr. Manhattan in the book.
Yeah, they say, like, this man is walking radiation. Like,
yeah. Well, if we're going to talk about Manhattan, let's go right to that. How do you feel about the cancer angle? How do you feel about the entire, like...
I kind of thought that was brilliant.
You've given everybody that you care about cancer.
Well, and it makes sense because he's, like I just said, he's walking radiation. You know, overexposure to radiation is what causes cancer cells to grow and for tumors to become there. So it was beautiful because, you know what? It also helps serving the narrative of he feels less connected to humans every day. And if now he feels like he's giving people cancer, how is he ever supposed to form a relationship with somebody?
That's very true. I think a lot of people forget that aspect of it.
Like he needs to forget what it feels like to be human. He needs to forget what it feels like to have friends, to have a lover.
Because he might cause all those people serious harm.
So then the only way to do that is to make it seem like he's giving his best friend and the woman he loves cancer. I thought it was brilliant.
It showed, like I said again, this fight where Dr. Manhattan is seemingly just unstoppable, but yet his emotions get the better of him at various points in this film, even going so far as to leave Earth entirely and go to Mars. You saw him dealing with the battle of morality with the comedian. The comedian shoots a woman, a pregnant woman, in Vietnam.
And oh, no, yeah. The comedian's like the other opposite end of the spectrum. Like, this is your superhero. This is your, like, bad guy in disguise. Like, we're that, and he's seemingly the reason why they had the Keen Act in the first place is because, you know, you can't just throw frilly costume on and say you're a superhero. It has to go with the actions.
Who do you think is more jaded at this point, the comedian or Rorschach?
I think the comedian. Remember, Rorschach gets off on his morality. He may be brutal.
So you think he still believes that there can be justice out there in the world, whereas the comedian doesn't see any.
Why do you think? Then that's why comedian died. If the comedian was a bad guy, he would have just let him. And not saying that, you know, Dreiberg is a bad guy, but if Rorschach was a bad guy, he would not. He would have just let Adrian get away with his plan.
I mean, Adrian at no point was threatening Rorschach. It's actually Manhattan who stands in his way to say, you know, you can't let this secret that we have now all seemingly agreed to hold. You cannot be the one thing to unravel all that.
No, yeah, but he didn't care because it's the right thing to do. Justice. It's an skewed form of justice, but it's justice nonetheless.
Well, he says once a man has seen society's black underbelly, he can never turn his back on it, never pretend like you do, that it doesn't exist. Like, and he has seen the very worst in humanity, whether it's his upbringing, whether it is what happened with that man who, I believe...
Listen, I think when you grow up with a mother that never loved you, that is one of the worst...
But the first criminal that he seemingly kills, he fed. She was the criminal.
Fed a little girl to a dog, bunch of dogs.
And once you've seen that, if you're talking about seeing the very worst of the worst,
Oh, that's the worst, because you're raping a little girl, you're killing a little girl, and then you're feeding her dead body to a bunch of dogs. That's the worst you can get when you're being a vigilante detective. And you know, what? Where were they even living?
I mean, they got no powers. It looks like regular. I mean, I don't think they ever pointed out.
It was either New York or like Los Angeles. Had to be one of them. Like,
definitely, but we have. Just that juxtaposition there, Ozymandias, Dr. Manhattan, Rorschach, like, you have the smartest man, you have the most determined man, and then you have, like, the most powerful man.
And then you have the everyman with the super fighting abilities.
Yeah, well, I think the everyman here is...
Night Owl. He's really the everyman.
Yeah, he ends up being the everyman of this series.
He ends up being just a side body, in a triangle love relationship with Manhattan and Silk Spectre.
Now, something I did not get from, and I don't know how exactly you portray it, but something I didn't get from the film more than I got from the comic is that Night Owl, when we see him, is not only retired, but like way out of shape, way unmotivated, way unhappy. Now, I kind of saw him unhappy. I didn't really feel like Patrick Wilson was all that out of shape. But he apparently put on 25 pounds to play the out of shape, Dan Dreiberg.
Patrick Wilson did an amazing job because I've seen
Great.
I've seen him in a lot of like B movies, like A-Team, Insidious or whatever. Conjuring, one of them. I don't remember. They're all the same. But he's a different kind of actor. He's like a different sort of method actor. But to see him in a movie like this, where he puts on the weight, he puts on the body scale. It's great. It warms my heart. I love Patrick Wilson.
They do a lot to humanize him. Like I said, he is the everyman. He's the guy who can't even get it up, right? A superhero who can't get it up. Literally humanizing these people. Like, literally putting them on the lowest... Not the lowest, like something we can... Now we...
It's like when you retire from a job. Myself into a grave here. It's like if you've had a job, like, your entire life, and then you just have to retire after, like, 40 years of service.
I mean, the soldier that returns from war and got no place to go, right?
Exactly.
The 20-year cop or a correction officer who's lived that life that one way and now has to retire, the firefighter.
So now he doesn't know what he does.
Yeah.
He sees the original Hollis Mason in every other week because...
That's the only person that cares that he was Night Owl.
Because that was the first Night Owl.
How do you feel about that, the inclusion of the Hollis Mason, the little bit we got
all those little Minuteman scenes that we got, the Minuteman scenes, I thought it was great.
This film has my favorite like title card sequence ever. Times are changing with the Minutemen.
That opening.
Showing where they've all gone. And we see a bit of those murders that took place, with some of the early members.
The only thing I would say is I would have loved to seen how some of those scenes played out. Like Mothman getting dragged away into an insane asylum. I would have loved to see what he was doing. Like,
you are a moth person, so I can see how that happened.
I'm a big fan of moths. Yes.
Like you said, the things that could be extended, fingers crossed, get extended in the HBO miniseries that's supposed to be coming out. Apparently, HBO has greenlit.
Yeah, and this is Damian Lindelof?
Damian Lindelof. I'm a fan of Damian
Prometheus.
Lindelof. I'm a fan of his show, The Leftovers, which deals with a lot of emotional, how humans deal with grief. So it'll be interesting to see how he sees how these humans deal with the positions that they were put into. But people are wondering whether it's going to draw from the miniseries itself. Will there be a longer version of this movie?
Well, there was a lot of things in the miniseries graphic novel that there wasn't in the movie. Like, right. But we do get shades to, like, the comic within a comic.
Yeah, the Black Freighter comic that's in the...
Yeah, they have the newspaper guy and the black boy that reads the comic in the graphic novel in the movie.
Right.
Like, they have that. They're one of the first. They're one of the people that hug each other when the bomb's about to go off in New York. Like,
yeah,
That's them. So they have those Easter eggs.
They pay
eggs.
Tribute. But like we were saying before, how much can you possibly put in here? With the series, though, like you said, maybe that will be an example of a way that you can use
it. Yeah, if they don't make it just 12 episodes, if they can find a way to make it, like, stretch it out. Like, I understand there was 12 books in the series, but if you could, like, stretch it out to, like, maybe 24-episode miniseries, give us, like, maybe a year and a half to just soak everything in, enjoy everything, it'd be great.
I mean, and
not a lot of people want to sit down for 3 hours, and I understand them.
You kind of got to be careful, though, because, as you know, Warner Brothers, I mean, DC, try to cash in on the hype of this Watchmen stuff by coming out with the Before Watchmen comics, which were not seen as necessary almost.
I tried reading one of them, and I think I tried reading Night Owls or something like that. I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, it's just not necessarily bad. It's just people felt that the way the Watchmen ended was fine, and that what they wanted more of, they didn't get seemingly in those books. So you got to make sure that what you are presenting is something that the fans ask for, which is a problem that Doomsday Clock is seemingly going to face. It's like, this has been so untouched.
The time is right. There's enough time. Because Watchmen came out in 84, 85? So it's been about 30 years. The comic just came, the comic book movie came out 8 years ago. So it's still... they're all out there, but it's been enough time for us to forget about it. So I think throwing this inclusion in could be really smart marketing wise and just fan service wise. I would love to see an after Watchmen comic spinoff with the Justice League.
With the DC characters, the characters that we know and love. What I think is kind of ironic is the fact that I would see Watchmen as a cautionary tale, right? This is our superhero genre taken to the grimmest extremes. And, while we can celebrate that, because I'm all for alternative realities, right? I'm all for, this is if they're all Russian, and this is if they're all Nazis, and this is if they're all depressed. I'm with that. But they almost took that and used that to base how they want to make their DC movies now. I see a lot of similarities to how Batman is written with Rorschach, and the bleakness of it.
Let's see, that's the problem. Everybody wants to be Dark Knight. Everybody wants to try and be Watchmen, and they lose out on what made those movies in general. The Watchmen served a purpose to be filmed and to adapt an unadaptable film.
Right.
And it served its purpose by being able to adapt an unadaptable film.
It also had a lot to say, but like I said, about the superhero genre, it had something to say. This was not a film that decided to be, made just to be made. Alan Moore is a creative genius. He had things he wanted to say about good and evil and how skewed it can be and how you could do good things for evil reasons.
Do the ends justify the means truly?
Exactly. And with superheroes, the genre, sometimes we don't think about the consequences to the effects of things like that. Like I said, I believe things like Civil War, the book and the movie, don't come out unless this book comes out, unless Watchmen comes out to say, well, this is a book in which people are putting, making superheroes deal with the consequences of their actions.
Yeah, which once again comes down to just that, consequences. This movie had consequences. The comedian rapes the Silk Spectre, Carla Gugino's Silk Spectre. What happens? We get Malin Acker's Silk Spectre. Yeah, she's Malin born. Ackerman.
I'm not a big fan of either Silk Spectre.
Well, I love Carla Gugino, and I would have loved to have seen more scenes of her, fighting and kicking ass, because she can. She's done it. She may be old, but she does it.
The most I saw her as is this weird. I didn't like the old people makeup thing. So,
Had really fat cheeks with that old person makeup.
Very odd. And the fact of the matter is, the woman who played Malin Ackerman's mother is 7 years older than her. Old can you make, how, seemingly old can you make her? But this idea, you hear the conversation between Silk Spectre 2's mother and father, where the father's like, I took, you and your daughter in, and that guy who tried to rape you, he tried to rape you, so then you'd let him try again. They were saying some really dark.
They were bringing really bad subject matter in seemingly what would be a kid friendly genre, but that's the thing, superhero movies don't have to be kid friendly.
They don't, because good and evil is not good always kid friendly.
Just because you're taking your kid to a movie doesn't mean you have to take him to that specific movie.
Right.
That this isn't your granddad's Superman, once again.
How did you feel about the Silk Spectre character in general?
As the crutch for Dr. Manhattan, and he even said it, you're my only tie to the outside world.
Right.
Once he found out that she was
screwing Dan.
Well, he already knew. That's the thing, is he knows everything about any time it's going to happen. It's all just the way he can't prevent it, because human nature.
Right.
You know, he sees every possible outcome.
Well, I also think it's the idea that I could tell you everything that's going to happen to you today, but you won't know how you're going to react to that till it actually happens.
It could take you on a different pattern.
You know? Even if you're not surprised, even if you knew, I can tell you everything you're going to go through today. And tomorrow you're going to see the cutest puppy you've ever seen. And then you actually see the cutest puppy. You know what I'm saying? Like, even with the knowledge of what was going to happen, I don't think you know how you're going to react until you react. And I think that's what he means when he says that things still have to play out. Like, although he sees it, he's still as much a puppet as everybody else. And I think Lori sees that. And when Lori sees that, she almost brings that up to, like, spite him. Like, she almost brings that up to say, like, for somebody who thinks that he's all there, for somebody who thinks that he has this mastery of life, you're just as much, you know, a pawn in this game as us. And, I mean, do you believe that? Do you believe that Dr. Manhattan is just as much of a pawn? Or do you think that was just a dig by Silk Spectre in a moment of feeling weak on Mars?
Well, it really depends on, you know, your personal beliefs. You know, from my personal beliefs, yes, he's just another pawn, an overpowered pawn, but he's still just another pawn in an otherwise giant chessboard. But it can be just another snap by Silk Spectre, because, you know, you can't blame her for cheating, because he really just stopped caring. You right. even see it with the fact that he makes multiple copies of himself to have sex with Lori just so he doesn't have to waste his time having sex so he can continue.
Literally, it's as much a chore to him as building the reactor.
Yeah, exactly. It's just another chore.
He's more interested in building the new energy machine.
Exactly.
So he's like, listen.
He's like, you know, let me just send like 3-4 guys in there. You know, she won't notice.
Well, think about it, right? It's like, people have been making love since cavemen. I'm actually building something that's going to create clean energy. You know, like, he's always talking about perspective, because he says, I believe another like cold, because he's throwing down cold lines the entire film. He's one of my favorite characters, Dr. Manhattan. He says something along the lines of like, the smartest man on earth means as much to me as the smartest termite.
You know? Oh yeah,
and I'm like, that's where he's at in this movie. By the time we get to the end, he's so indifferent.
He's just a deity.
He's so indifferent, and he was on Earth, got blamed by a bunch of people for cancer, went to Mars, came back to Earth, got blamed for the whole bombing. So, you know, I don't blame him for being like,
no, I don't blame him at all.
I'm out of here. I'm making like this cool glass house.
No, it's a clock. It's a watch. That's the beauty of symbolism. That big glass tower shit that he was making on Mars was the whole inside frame of a watch.
Did you see the happy face on the?
Yes.
On the moon, or Mars? One of those two.
It was on Mars.
I believe it was on Mars. Yeah, yeah. I'm getting my big old planets mixed up. I think Mars is the red one. I'm pretty sure.
Which is weird. I wonder if he had to like if he had Lori in like her own like atmospheric bubble because
bubble.
Like yeah.
When
like, she was just walking around like nothing.
One of my favorite parts between Lori and Dr. Manhattan is when she asks him to, like, you know what? You keep saying, I don't understand you. I don't understand you. Help me understand you. Do that thing that you do. That's literally what she
said.
And
then he just touched her forehead just to see that's how he realized that's what made him, like, more, you know, associated with humanity again. Because, you know, Lori was born out of Stockholm Syndrome.
Well,
rape.
Yeah, well, the idea... He says in a very poetic way that what it's like Lori's birth was like turning air into gold. It's saying that the possibility of that happening, the immense possibilities that take place in this world, like you were talking about before, string theory, the fact that in a universe where absolutely everything can happen, we live in a universe in which the worst man, like the worst hero in the world, and a respectable woman engaged in a sexual assault situation that then birthed the woman that I'm in love with. I think just the almost
the
joke,
poetic
right,
justice
say,
behind
right?
it.
The poetic justice, the cosmic irony. I think the bad joke, as they say throughout this film, right? I think that to him more than her, that the odds of that. More than her. I don't think he loves her at this point when he says this.
I think he just loves the odds.
I think it's like when your dog does a trick for the first time. You're like, you get a new sense of appreciation because you're like, wow, they're a lot smarter than I thought. Like, this is a lot more intricate than I thought. I've been playing off humanity as this, like, as a bunch of cavemen knocking into each other. Maybe there is specks of beauty by default, by this ability to every so often create gold from air or create a lorry from a bad situation, like the sexual assault there. How do you feel about how Comedian handled being a father? You know, he kind of tried to step up and talk to her. And
I wouldn't want that man 10 feet near my daughter. Well, I wouldn't want that man anywhere near her.
He did not sexually assault the mother. That, like, when he sexually assaulted
the
mother,
he attempted to rape her. And oh, then yeah. She ended up just going out on a date with him, exactly, and sleeping with him anyways.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So what I mean to say is that what anger is she harboring? Is she angry? Is she harboring the anger of the sexual assault, which I'm assuming is prior?
Well, I just think she's just harboring the anger of who he is as a person, who Eddie Blake was.
And that, I guess, we see with her dealing with the effects of that choice through her whole life, you know, and having the effects of that choice be put back in her face.
Yeah, that's why she started the drinking. That's why she stopped being the Silk Spectre, and why her daughter did take over, because, you know, she just couldn't cathartically find a way to get over those feelings that she was harboring over the fact that, yeah, her only child was born through Stockholm syndrome from almost rape.
Yeah.
Who's a Hooded Justice stopped it. That was his name. Hooded Justice.
So, you know, I just like how Silk Spectre was able to almost save humanity a little bit, and, you know, like, by showing Dr. Manhattan a little bit of what he could learn from humanity, or a little bit of what
Totally her that did it. It was the way he perspective. It was his perspective of it. It's the way he perceived it. He saw, like, the most rarest anomalies happen right in front of his own very eyes.
Now, speaking of anomalies, Ozymandias, Adrian Veidt. Let's talk a little bit about him, the smartest man on the earth. Like I said, we mentioned him briefly before, but this is a person that basically at this point...
I don't really think he's the smartest man on earth. I think he's just like one... He's just very strategic. He's very calculated. You know, he thinks of everything he possibly can, but he doesn't think of everything he possibly can, and that's why he was stopped. You know, like even the world's smartest man got stopped by the world's giantest tyrant.
I mean, but did he get stopped? Because... ultimately, the person that found him out, or the people that find him out...
You know, that's the thing is, we don't know if he got stopped, because we don't know if people are going to take Watchmen's journal as serious as I would like to believe that we would take it as.
Well, what do you mean when you
say... Rorschach's journal, sorry.
What do you mean when you say stop, though? That's I think that's like, where I'm like, confused, okay. Because I think with his ability to bring that
he
did not get
stopped.
Yeah,
he won.
There is no stopping. And, you know, spoiler alert, while I don't know, as of this recording right now, while I don't know what happens with the actual journal, the rest of the world does find out that Ozymandias was lying about this starfish. And he ends up becoming public enemy number one, to the point that they're trying to hunt him down. The FBI, the CIA, every country in the world is gunning for the world's smartest man.
Exactly. The needs of the many definitely outweigh the needs of the few there. So, like, he killed, like, thousands... He killed millions to save billions.
Billion. That's the quote, right?
And killed millions to save billions. I love Matthew Good.
How do you feel about do you feel that he was sympathetic to those?
I know what he wanted to
plan.
Do. He wanted world peace, and he got it in the most, you know, savagest of ways. Like, it was. Yeah, he's in the comics, he's bringing down a squid. In the movies, he's blowing up people, like dropping nuclear bombs. But you know what? If it gives us world peace, sure, I'm for it. If it gives us a reason to, like, not fight each other and fight an outside party,
fight an octopus or some sort of
squid. But you know, if Dr. Manhattan left. He left the galaxy. He went to go find different galaxies, different realities to, like, make his own world. So it's like, how are we going to, like, band together to fight somebody if he's not here? Yeah. So we don't fully know if we got world peace. So really, he could just be killing people, just and it just ends up being that he just killed people. There could be no like reward for that action.
But in the vein of every great villain ever, Ozymandias in this moment believes that there is nothing else to possibly do. There is no other solution for this problem of the world being on the brink of nuclear destruction.
He's very like, I'm trying to remember the quote word for word, but you know, humanity has seen its end, and every time it sees its end, it restarts itself.
Right, and this is a world in which every country we're at war. We are at war. Isn't this
like an alternate reality where we lose World War II?
We have we have Nixon on his fourth term, I believe.
Fifth. Fifth term.
A bunch of stuff going on with there. So there is very much like the Cold War, an arms race. People do have weapons. But in this universe, seemingly we're getting closer and closer to Doomsday, where people are willing to set off these nukes. And at one point, Dan asks Ozymandias, like, couldn't John, speaking of Dr. Manhattan, stop all this? And he goes, if they threw 100 and John stops 99, one would be enough to destroy everything we know and love. And I think in that moment, just like in BVS when Batman was doing the crunching the numbers, that was too
much.
There's
even a 1% chance.
Yeah, that 1% or that absolute certainty. That one nuke was enough for Ozzy to figure, you know what? I'm going to have to put this in my own hands. Because
all
like
it does
I said,
take is one.
He said himself, he can't even trust Manhattan to do it. Even if Manhattan dropped one, it'd be a wrap. So he was definitely pushed up against his limits. And a lot of what happens with Superman and Dr. Manhattan can be said also with this situation with Ozymandias, where Superman, people say that Superman is almost obligated to help as much as he has because of the powers that he has. Same thing with Dr. Manhattan, right? Dr. Manhattan, you have to save everyone because you are the only one with the power to save everyone.
It's a gift and a curse.
While Dr. Manhattan does not feel that weight, right? I don't feel like Dr. Manhattan feels the weight of, like, the world is, I'm responsible for the world. Ozymandias does. Adrian does. Adrian feels like, as the smartest man here, it's up to me.
But because he idolized guys like, like the Pharaoh Ramsey and Alexander the Great. He literally says he idolized the man he feels most related to. Died 1,000 years before him.
Yeah, he said the only person of whom I felt any kinship with died 300 years before the birth of Christ. Alexander of Macedonia, or Alexander the Great, as you know him.
Yeah, but the man conquered 9 countries.
He did. Didn't he, like, get bit by a snake or something?
He was poisoned.
There you go. I knew it was some kind of...
Yeah, he was poisoned, but the man still conquered 9 countries, 9 empires. Like, Alexander the Great was the man.
Yeah.
And Ozymandias is the man. They're all the man.
I mean, he really... I felt like he was a little bit more sinister in this movie than he was in the book. I mean, he murders that entire group of scientists, remember? They all have, like, a toast to the good life. And when you turn, there's a bunch of dead bodies, and he's walking over them. Obviously, both in the comic book and in the miniseries, he is the guy who kills the comedian. And that fight, I thought, was filmed amazingly.
Exponentially. Love that fight.
Unforgettable, playing in the background. That little nod to 300 when the number one gets knocked off of the room number. That's 3001 or 1300, one of those.
I thought it was just that the glass breaks at the door and it's just the door number says 300. I didn't see the one coming off. But
It's just crazy that you see, like, you can almost feel the sound design of this fight is amazing. You can feel every
hit. Oh, you hear every punch. And that's what's so beautiful is because even though we know these guys aren't superheroes, we have to give a little sense of their strength. It has to show that, yes, a comedian would be able to punch a hole through the drywall. That Ozymandias would be able to push his head through a marble sink.
Some people have had a little bit more problem with that than others. In the comic book, they flat out and out had no powers. In this, they seem to have a little bit of super strength and a little bit of like mastery.
Well, it's not really super strength. It's just it's more of the force of what you can punch. You know, like these guys are like the size of heavyweight boxers. Look at Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah,
the man's the size of a heavyweight boxer. Matthew Good is like 6'3". He's pretty tall.
Crazy. Yeah, he is.
These guys are big people. You know, the pounds per pressure that you would put with a punch. I thought it was
crazy because they're the biggest guys, and the guy who probably kicks the most ass in this is Rorschach. breaking fingers, burning people with
oil. No, Rorschach's fighting, and Jackie O'Harley's pretty short,
which makes him like this like bull terrier of a man, like this
little chihuahua just biting at your ankle, like.
This little scrappy dog of justice, just you know, biting, pulling at your.
Yeah, but I wouldn't mess with Rorschach, no, especially with that prison scene where he just burns the guy with the hot oil.
Out of control. Oh, I mean, all of it, even with the hatchet scene where he kills the man who murdered that little girl. So, like I said, all of this is just a. So, Adrian Veidt is almost a.
He's like a Lex Luthor of some sorts. Yeah, exactly. Knock on wood. He's definitely a Lex Luthor of some sorts.
Where he knows there's an existence of somebody who is seemingly more powerful than him, but does that see that person as a threat? Almost, you know.
It's more of a difference man, because he doesn't. It's not that he wants to kill Manhattan. But
his indifference to allowing him to be the center of the world's hate shows me that he doesn't care for him too much, you know? Unless he just thinks, John could take it.
He doesn't care for anybody. He just, even when that one flashback of the comedian burning the map, like, you know, it shows that Veidt doesn't care about the people. He cares about the preservation of just the society. Like, so, it's not that one person he cares about. He cares about his overall community. So it's like...
Do you think that's the spectrum of this film? Do you think that Adrian Veidt and...
Oh, he's definitely on opposite end of spectrum of
Rorschach. I would say Rorschach is the most
Rorschach
emotional...
Rorschach cares about the person.
I think he's the most emotionally tied.
He knows society
tied.
Is fucked up.
Yeah, he's the most emotionally tied. Like, his motives are the most emotionally tied as far as, like, he believes in justice.
Because he was just trying to do the right thing the whole
movie.
Yeah,
he believes
that's
in
all.
Justice. Although his means of doing these things are sometimes
come with death, but you know, you gotta crack a few omelets to make. You gotta crack a few eggs to make a couple of omelets. You know.
Before we wrap it up, what are some of your favorite scenes of this film? I just want to gush over.
Okay,
some of my favorite scenes
would definitely be the opening fight sequence. You know, and the opening title sequence,
sequence.
You know, like the first 45 minutes really of the movie is really like a lot of I liked, but I liked all of Rorschach's scenes from the prison to him fighting the cops in the hallway, you know, giving us the very first, really, hallway fight sequence going down the stairs. Like, you know, we didn't have that yet.
It was also kind of haunting to see them washing the comedian's blood off the sidewalk as the film
starts.
Oh, yeah. But that's the kind of universe that we're going to get into.
I like the Silk Spectre and Night Owl angle a lot. And I like they're fighting in the streets just for that adrenaline rush. Yeah, when they're breaking bones out of arms.
How do you feel about the most awkward love scene ever in a superhero film?
Oh God, that was just I can't
heard
get it up.
There was a secret code.
I loved that's Leonard Cohen, man. All respect to Leonard Cohen.
But you put in like Genuine, you know, like you put on Pony when you're trying to go.
No, yeah, it was way too awkward. I heard. There was
Hallelujah.
A secret chord. Yeah, that was an awkward version of Hallelujah. It's just, I love that version of Hallelujah.
Leonard Cohen spoken words just get Dan Dreiberg all riled up.
And then you get the climax, and then he has a climax with the fire being set. Like, that's all.
Because he's the everyman.
Yeah,
he has his tech gadgets, he's the everyman.
We didn't need we didn't need a lot of those scenes, but the love sequences were great. I like the whole dream sequence where they rip each other's
faces off,
skins
off,
identities. And it's just their suits, yeah, because that was from the comics too.
The other side. Yeah, they found a really cool way to do that. I to tell you the truth, I think if I can pencil in one favorite part of the scene, because I actually feel like this part of the film almost takes a life on its own, is the Dr. Manhattan flashback of the origin.
Oh yes,
the entire part of where
that's
John
Tyler Bates
is,
score with
yeah,
it
when
everything,
he's
the
narrating that glass that when they're playing like that's basically that water glass effect or whatever, but the entire time that John is narrating, I think is a completely different movie, in a good way. Like that they're able to stitch the perspectives of Rorschach, Night Owl,
and it's all about
and Dr.
feel.
Manhattan.
Like every character arc was a different feel. You had a different emotion towards it.
To hear him say what he loved and what he didn't, and then slowly it becomes like, my wife thinks that I don't like her because she's getting too old, and she's right.
She's
but
right,
I don't
want
to tell her. Like
that's
like,
great.
Because
you
like,
could see him feeling the shuffledness. You feel that he's slowly going away from society.
And check this out, right? He feels no emotion, right? But feels guilty about feeling no emotion.
That's what's crazy.
Isn't that
it's
crazy?
Like, I don't feel bad for cheating. I feel bad that I don't feel bad for cheating.
That's exactly what it is throughout this movie. He's angered because people are constantly telling him, like, you're not plugged in, are you? Like, you're off the reservation. And he doesn't see how far he's gone until he literally leaves the planet. You know? And it goes to show that, you know, that's how easy we can detach ourselves when we feel that we are being destructive to others, or we feel that no one's understanding our current path or plight.
Well, I don't know how he would never be able to find someone that understands how he's feeling unless Superman really did exist,
Kansas. Issue one of Doomsday Clock, man, one of the covers was Superman and Dr. Manhattan, and they're saying that Dr. Manhattan is who messed up all this timeline. It wasn't Flash and Flashpoint. It was Dr. Manhattan this entire time.
Oh, DC just wants reboots.
We're about to get that. We're about to get Superman meeting Dr. Manhattan. And
I just want three panels of them just having coffee.
What do you want to come about that? Now, obviously, we're fantasy booking or whatever, as you will, but... With this happening, these guys are coming to DC. This very delicate situation, right? I tell you the truth, I hope one of them dies at the end of Doomsday Clock, just so that, you know, I don't want to see the Silk Spectre Harley Quinn team up book. No. I personally don't. If you do, that's fine.
I don't want Batman and Rorschach, you know, brooding together.
You know, I want these 12 issues is long. I want this long series, and I want them to have interactions.
But I want it to be a mini series. You know, you know, don't continue the story. Keep it a knockoff, a one off. You know, like
that's the whole beauty of novelty, comics, right? Isn't that part of the novelty?
Exactly.
Is the story closed and there is no continuation?
Look at Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man went on for over close to 30 years. It was called the longest running comic book title until they turned it to Superior Spider-Man. But that's the beauty of comics. Just make them 12, 13 issue knockoffs just for us to have something to enjoy, something to marinate. You know, I don't want to have to continue to go back to 500 different issues.
Well, you want both, right? You want both. You want both the movie that's going to have 18 sequels, and you want the one-shot movie that's just great on the merits of it just being alone.
When it's a franchise, I want a franchise. But when it just needs to be a trilogy or just have a sequel, then that's all we need.
So what would you want out of a Dr. Manhattan and Superman interaction?
A lot of deep intellectual conversations about emotions, feeling. I want to know how they feel, because there is no way Superman does not feel alone in this world.
Do you see Manhattan swing Superman to his side of indifference, or do you see Superman swing Manhattan on his side of hope?
I think that they're gonna clash in a lot of idealistic ways. Their ideologies are gonna be two different sides of the same coin.
Right.
And I think it's gonna in turn maybe have them fight. In a way, in some sort of it, which I don't see. I don't see anybody being able to fight Manhattan without him holding back. It's the same thing with Justice League with and or without Superman. It's still only 1% difference. You know, Superman could end everything here, but not with this case.
How do you feel about the fact that Manhattan is the only person with powers here? Do you feel like the other ones are kind of wasted being on this team where Manhattan can get everything done by himself?
Well, or I think is the fact this a that thing Manhattan where everyone knows has a that place. He can do everything himself makes him, like, you know, want to hold back. Like, he's got to restrain himself a lot. If he really wanted to, he could have fought. He didn't need to, like, go through all of that smacking of the glass and putting his hand through the building against Adrian. He could have just, you know, snap his fingers, end it.
Maybe one could argue that the inclusion of Dr. Manhattan, right, that the fact that the government knew that Dr. Manhattan existed made the Kane Act easier to pass, right? Who needs pretenders? Who needs fake hooded superheroes when we have ours? Look, he's right here. He's blue. And he does everything we say. We don't need random vigilantes here on the street. So maybe that's the reason why you end up weaponizing a guy like Manhattan and end up getting rid of all the other superheroes. Because if you have a Manhattan, do you really need anything else?
No, especially if you have a Manhattan that doesn't feel any sort of emotion for humans, no compassion whatsoever for his seemingly fellow man, then yeah, like that is a dangerous weapon to have.
Definitely. I guess there's nothing dangerous than indifference, or nothing dangerous than compromising your morals, right? Like that's a lot of what this film is about.
Never compromise.
Never compromise, not even in the face of Armageddon. How excited would you be for a Justice League Watchmen film? directed by Zack Snyder.
I think he can do it without the studio. Like, if he, like, you know, does it in secret, doesn't tell Warner.
You think, like, you think if he does the whole, like, Saddam in a whole...
Yeah, like, if he just does it by himself, like he just takes a bunch of, like, actors, like, well-known that would keep their mouth shut, take them to, like, a different country, to, like, Australia, and just say, listen, we're just going to make Justice League and Watchmen versus each other, but don't tell nobody. So, Jeff Johns doesn't have to know anything.
You didn't hear it from me. I would like to see that. Like I said,
how could he not handle Justice League? That's the thing is, I didn't see Justice League yet, but from what I hear... There's no way he messed up. It was definitely studio interference. It was definitely last-minute cuts, all the bring-ins and add-ons. If he can handle stuff like Dawn of the Dead, if he can handle Watchmen, he can handle Justice League.
I think so.
Dude, the only difference is it's Justice League is a more large-scale action.
I also think that people need to explain to him the difference between the two, because the more you understand the difference between the Justice League and the Watchmen, the more you'll get a better understanding of each team.
Yeah, we need the action of Man of Steel's last 45 minutes with all of Justice League's teamwork. Like, the way they did the building between each character arc was genius. It was great, and it flowed perfectly. Was it long? Yes. But you know what? Sometimes I want a nice three-hour movie. I don't mind it.
And this also starts the beginning of Zack Snyder's cuts, right? Like, here's the director's cut of a longer film.
Oh, yeah, because Sucker Punch had a director's cut.
Exactly, and then you start going with the BVS cut, the Justice League cut, and things start rolling out past there.
Because that's the thing. It's either watch the studio's version or watch my version, and a lot of people trust Zack Snyder as a director to watch his version. And then they want to sell you with the Blu-ray, like, buy this Blu-ray for $10.99, and it has the Zack Snyder cut. And all of a sudden, you're like, wait, this wasn't in the original.
Yeah,
like,
this one. I have to buy this one now,
Yeah, and then that's why sometimes I won't watch a movie in theaters if I hear there's too many, like, studio interferences and the director didn't get a lot of creative control. I will wait for it to come out on Blu-ray, and I will watch the director's intended version with all of his creative control.
There's absolutely no point in watching half a movie. But we got to see this full movie, and I absolutely loved it. In conclusion, what would you say the Watchmen movie is about?
The Watchmen movie is really about war and what happens if we lost it and what happens if we don't have the necessary tools to fight another one. Then it's also about what superheroing does to you when you're just a human. You know, a lot of these times, these superheroes are superpowered. So when they have, like, a high intelligence and, you know, like, when they have, like, super speed or super strength, you know, they can be able to handle a lot of the things that a human can't. I'm trying to find the words, but emotions. It's all about emotions. This movie is very emotional. From how we feel if we lost the war, to how we feel if we have superpowers, to how we feel if we lost our chance of being the good that we can be, you know, because...
Oh, I'm letting you answer first so I could take your answers and just make them... give myself a little bit more time to have my answers. Because I do think... I agree with you. It's about humanity.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying about emotions. It's about humanity, what it takes to be a human.
It's like, what happens if you find a human where he has nothing left to give, nothing left to do, and you just keep pushing him
and
pushing
him? And what is humanity? Is the perfect human... really perfect, or is humanity perfect in its imperfection?
Like, what is perfection? I think perfection is just perspective.
Well, Ozymandias is what people would, I guess, I see as the ideal, right? He can do everything, he can be everywhere, he can, and yet he is amazed by someone like Silk Spectre's ability to be born. So that imperfect situation that caused Silk Spectre's birth ends up being the perfect example of humanity, how accidents, like, we're all happy accidents, and it's about perspective. It's not about, like, Night Owl's life isn't glamorous and Rorschach isn't a millionaire, but it's about how they feel about doing the things that they're doing. And that's a lot about what humanity is. It's about our perspective. How do we feel about doing the things that we're doing? How do sticking to our morals make us feel? I think it's about nostalgia. I think it's about losing your identity. I think it's about losing your value in a society that moves too fast to remember you. I think it's about we see that with how Night Owl 1 gets basically killed, you know, beaten to death in his
home. That was so sad because you know he didn't even do anything.
It's about
they just mixed up his names.
It's about the old saying about the road to hell is paved with good intentions, because Ozymandias was just trying to help. No good
deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, you know, Ozymandias was just trying to help out. This film is about so much, and I'm so glad that, you know, I saw it. I hope more people see it. I hope this gets to the click and more people get more excited about seeing this movie, because...
No, yeah, if I could walk away from today with anything, it's that I hope more people watch this movie. And yes, listen, guys, it's about 3 hours and 25 minutes.
It is.
I understand. We both understand. That's a long movie. And if you have to watch it in episodes, watch it in episodes. Watch 45 minutes of it and then just walk away if you have to. You know, give yourself time to the process Watchmen it. Show. Like, exactly. You know, have your little self a Watchmen week. You know, just watch a couple of minutes of it every day just to give yourself time to process all of this information, because it is a lot of information that gets thrown at you. But it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel dragged. You know, everything flows with an even pace.
It's definitely a landmark film, and the book itself is a landmark book. Like, it changed so much of what we know about comic books. So you owe it to yourself, if you're a comic book fan, if you're a fan of superhero films, to watch Watchmen, because it will show you a different side and make you more gracious, have more gratitude towards.
Listen, if you want to see what you got, Batman vs Superman could have been. If you want to watch what Justice League could have been, definitely throw on The Watchmen.
It doesn't. You have to watch it and pay attention. And you can't watch it passively. It deals with a lot of big questions. Oh yeah,
you definitely have to, like, topics. You can't be your face inside your phone texting away while this movie is playing. You will miss a lot of crucial information. Everything is Easter egged. Everything is referenced.
But like, if you give yourself the time and attention to detail of this film, it will reward you. You will see all the bits and pieces that they're trying to give you. I think this is a great film, and I also think this is a great time to tell you guys that you can catch all these kinds of reviews, comic books, TV shows. I mean, we did Crisis on Earth X, we've done Doomsday Clock, we got to do a little bit of Dark Knight's Metal, and now Watchmen. Like, literally, this is like the funnest thing in the world. How do you feel about this experience here? I got to ask you know, everybody else who sits on the opposite side of this table how they feel. How do you feel about this major issues and this ability, I guess, to talk about the things that you kind of love in the geek community?
This is definitely a beautiful environment. Everybody, this is a great, you know, just platform, you know, podcasting. Everyone podcasts, everyone YouTubes, you know. Not many people read internet forums anymore. So just any way to get your voice out there. And there's a lot of geeks out there in the fandom world. And I'm glad that we could all just, like, voice each other's opinions together. I'm glad we can find solace in this really weird world, you know. Like, and I've been in with the comic book click for about a year now, and I just love this place. Every day it just gets better and better for us, and we're
growing, and the audience is growing. Grew
podcast time,
the audience is growing, grew. But we need a favor from you guys to help the audience grow even more. Tell your friends about this podcast. Go to podbean.com and search Comic Book Click. That's Click, CLIQUE. Go to iTunes. We're on iTunes, people. Go to iTunes and look up the Major Issues podcast, or Major Issues, like I said, again, on podbean.com. And when you go to iTunes, try to leave us a review, some comments. Let us know how we can get better, because that's all we're trying to do here is get better. We're trying to be your little weekly friend that knocks on the door.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
And come on, we're taking creative criticism here. That's all we're trying to do here. Comic Book Click is get better, like I said. So leave us a nice review. Say something nice. Leave us a couple stars. If you do that, you will help us get out there and get more members to the Click, and we can have more diverse conversations about the things that we love here at Comic Book Click.
We need more people.
As you know, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbookclick. We're on Instagram at Comic Book Click. You can use the hashtag Comic Book Click to talk about all the latest and greatest things to come to comic books and comic book media. We are constantly posting news. We have merch on tpublic.com. But it's all about Major Issues here. That is the new venture that we are putting all our little hearts and souls into, because we want to get the message down to you guys, the Click. So don't forget to go to iTunes. Don't forget to tell your friends about this podcast. And this podcast can be found wherever podcasts are found. This has been the Major Issues Podcast, episode 3. These things are just moving, huh? Next thing you blink would be episode 30. And then we could do a review on Watchmen 2, Electric Boogaloo. I'm waiting for that movie to come out. But this has been a Major Issues episode number 3. My name is George Serrano, aka The Don.
And I am Dan the Comic Man.
And we got major issues. And don't forget, because you got to remember that you, yes, you are worthy.